All rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Wheelock, Judge Bjorkman, Judge Hallbrooks, the Honorable Sarah I. Wheelock presiding.
Please be seated. And hopefully you can all hear me just fine. I've been a little under the weather and I don't want to share my germs with anybody, so I am wearing a mask. Well, good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It's, if you didn't know, Wednesday, December 11th, and we have three cases on the schedule for oral argument today. As our marshal noted, I'm Judge Wheelock, and I'm presiding over the panel today with Judges Bjorkman and Judge Hallbrooks. And we are holding our arguments today in courtroom 200 of the Minnesota Judicial Center. So, just as a reminder, our oral arguments are recorded by the court. And for that reason, they're also generally available for review within about 24 hours on the branch website. But for that reason, when you start your argument, if you could please state your name and the party you represent, for the record, that would be very helpful. If you forget, I'll remind you. So, with that, Marshall, please call the first case before us this morning.
The first case this morning is A240603, Mary Ellen Rice, formerly known as Block, versus William Ray Block.
Okay, and counsel, you probably each know you'll have 15 minutes. With 5 additional minutes for rebuttal for appellant. There's a timer on the podium that will reset according to your time, and you can also move the podium up and down. So, with that, counsel for appellant, please begin when you are ready.
Thank you. I do have a hard time hearing you because I do have hearing aids, but I'll try.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me know.
May it please the court, my name is Dennis Johnson. I'm with Chestnut Cambrone Law Firm, and I represent William Block, the appellant in this matter. Also, welcome, Mr. Hicks. I had the pleasure of trying this case 13 years ago. And I'm kind of hard to believe that I'm standing here today talking about it again. There's two issues before the court. One deals with the overpayment of the property division. The other is a spousal maintenance. I'd like to deal with what we consider a big issue, and that's the overpayment first. When I tried this case back in 2013, one of the big issues that was litigated was whether or not I'm going to call them just the receivables. Those are Preservation Development, White Eagle, and M&H combined about $6 to $8 million, should simply be apportioned to Mr. Block, and then he owes $4 million back to Ms. Rice. The court, after trial, clearly said, look, these are debts are way too speculative to put them into his column. His own expert, Howard Kaminsky, on page 11 of the decree, it's noted that he testified that the chance of these being paid are extremely remote. So to put them in the marital estate, so to speak, would not be fair to Mr. Block. As a
that
result,
was a favorable ruling for your client, was it not?
Pardon me?
That was a very favorable ruling
correct
for your client.
I would agree. That was then contested in the amended finding request, which it was denied. Then it went to the appellate court, and again they argued, put him in his column, and the appellate court said, no, we're going to make it so it's, you get it when it's paid, you both get the money. That brings us to the Preservation Development, which is the only one, quite frankly, that would had any chance of getting paid, because as you recall, in 2013 the bridge had not been built going over to Hudson. Lots there simply weren't selling because nobody could get to Minnesota if they wanted to buy a lot. Eventually the bridge was built and Preservation Development became a viable asset, which is now paid off. The other two, I will just tell you, will probably never be paid because there's no money to pay it. When we get to Preservation Development, they started selling the lots. I wasn't involved in this, but evidently there was some difficulty getting money from Mr. Block and whatever was going on in his
head.
That's
been a common theme in the case, it's
yeah,
fair to say.
I'm not going to disagree with that.
Right. I mean, you know, I noted the unclean hands analysis or the unclean hands
I don't
reasoning
think
that the district court referenced. And I don't see you really disagreeing with that analysis, which seems on some level to be persuasive. How does that play into either the overpayment argument or the spousal maintenance?
I think the unclean hands pays into the spousal maintenance, and that's the only thing it applies to. I don't think that you can use unclean hands to modify a judgment and decree. A judgment decree is, I think they put out in their brief, is final. That's it. You can't have unclean hands and then say, okay, let's give her another $500,000 because of the way he acts. The decree is a decree. And she was entitled to $1,007,000 out of that preservation development, and she got $1,430,000, which we've never heard any dispute as to what she's received. Their own receiver had a very detailed analysis of what she got. I myself sent $290,000 from our trust account. So I don't think there's any dispute she got $1,004,000. I don't think that there's any argument that unclean hands modifies this decree to allow her to get $500,000. So that's my analysis on how that comes into play.
To the extent the district court viewed these, I'm going to call them speculative receivables, as a group, aggregated them.
No, they did not.
All right.
If you look at the original decree, there's even separate paragraphs for each one.
Right, but to the extent that the district court may have done that in finding there is no overpayment, would that be an error?
Are you talking about
the
district court ruling that I was in front of Judge Finnegan?
I'm talking about the district court order that's on appeal to us now, in which the district court said there was no overpayment.
I don't think the district court did a good enough analysis myself, and I don't think that you can aggregate those items. In other words, there's no question that, let's just say they got $3 million, she got $3 million out of preservation development. The decree does not allow for you to then apportion part of that to White Eagle and M&H. It simply doesn't. Otherwise, they're getting what they asked for 13 years ago. Let's put it all in his column. And if he doesn't collect it, it's too bad for him. And that's not what the decree said. And I think he misstated that in his ruling. To aggregate them is not appropriate.
Mr. Jensen, I was curious about the reason that you or your firm forwarded this $290,000 or whatever the sum was. Was that as a result of the determination of Steve Schmidt, the special master?
It was a result of, and I wasn't involved in this, and I know Steve Schmidt, I trust him. I think what happened was he came in and kind of got into a mode that she gets half of everything, period. And I don't think anybody, till I got involved, looked and saw that she only gets half of $2 million. That's all that's coming out of preservation for her. They simply started sending her half of every sale. And so what happened was is that before I got involved, they got a judgment against Mr. Block for $290,000 as part of the preservation development. When I came in, they were garnishing, they were trying to levy on so I had to try to clean that up, and the only way to clean it up is to pay it, even if it's an overpayment.
And when you say when you came in, because you tried the case, and then were you not representing Mr. Block for a period of time? Is that why?
Yeah, for like 10 years or 12
okay.
years.
Okay.
Yeah, he had, Alan Eisness did the appeal. He was involved, and then he fell out of sorts with Mr. Block, and then Mr. Block was on his own for a long period of time. Then he had a couple other lawyers involved, and then, you know, we didn't end on bad terms, but of course I didn't really want to get back involved, but he came to me and I said, I do understand the case, so I'll try to help you. I said, but if I'm going to do that, you got to pay. I said, you're going to have to pay this $290,000. You have to pay all the, so we cleaned at that point everything up. And also, mistakenly, he felt because he's owed $400,000, he didn't pay the spousal maintenance. I get that. But when that all came to fruition, I got that all paid too. Everything's been paid. Everything's current right now.
Right, and the requirement that money be put in a trust.
That's all there too. But I don't think that any of that, his way he handled spousal maintenance, which in my mind was the unclean hands that they're talking about, it wasn't unclean hands related to the payment of preservation development. That's just a set decree that says you get X amount of dollars, and once that paid, you're done. Well, she got $1,430,000 instead of $1,007,000. And I don't know how you can look at that. I don't think the math, I think my reply brief set out exactly what the math was, because the intimation in respondent's brief was, well, there's still money owed, so you know she still hasn't gotten her $5 million. Part of that $5 million were these speculative debts. You're not supposed to get them until they get paid. All the other stuff zeroes out to a T. The money she received, the money she was supposed to receive, along with the money she's supposed to get out of preservation development. But once that's paid, the only time she gets more money is if White Eagle ever pays off or M&H ever pays off, which being intimately involved in this for a long time and knowing the business reality of those two, they're never going to be able to pay those debts. And even Kaminsky said that.
She and
said,
at the risk of oversimplifying the case, but with this overpayment issue, because it seemed to me the district court was saying, even if there is an overpayment, it could be sorted out at the time everything concludes, anticipating that there would be revenue from these other sources.
But the chances of being paid are zip to none.
Right, and that's what your response is.
Yeah, and I also know, I hate to say it, but the decree doesn't say that. The decree doesn't say we have $7 million of these three debts, so as you chip away at it, just we'll apply it. It line item each one, and even in the balance sheet, it took White Eagle and M&H, and they put half in each column. And that means once you get it, then you get paid. It doesn't mean if he gets a little more money on preservation, we're going to give that to you too. That's not what the decree says at all. And that's what they're arguing they want to see done again, which three courts or two courts, the lower court, the amended findings court, and then the appellate court said no. You only get paid if you get it. That's the only fair way to do it. So now she's been overpaid on one of them, and it's not fair that he sits on it.
And Judge Rickman's obviously got a question too, but just to try to pin that down for me at least, I know the unclean hands issue probably does pertain more to spousal maintenance, but he has demonstrated, you know, such a terrible response to this. And at some point the courts are just saying, how long does this litigation go? For a divorce that occurred in 2013. And here we are still. And I think that much of this conduct is a result of his behavior.
Go ahead. Again, I'd be shocked if because someone thinks they overpaid and they're contesting that's unclean hands. I get the spousal maintenance.
But it's a trust level, I think. You know, I mean, can he be trusted? Because in the beginning it was they're going to share in the risks and the rewards, you know, type of arrangement, which seemed fine in principle, maybe. But now, you know, with him owning these companies, what is his incentive to actually, derive any money from them?
I'm just telling you that knowing the facts of this case, I don't think the incentive's there for either one, because there's no money. White Eagle is 18 holes of golf course does include property to sell for houses, which is preservation development, and that came to fruition. Mm-hmm. There's no clubhouse that's attached to it, so you'd have to sell just land with no clubhouse. Clubhouse is owned by somebody else. M&H was a pass-through that never had any money, and there's no way that there's any money to fund that. So to say that, well, he may not work hard to get the other stuff, that's just giving her $500,000 windfall, which makes no sense to me. I get it. It might get some time, and if somebody wants to get aggressive, they can go try to do it. But until those are paid, she shouldn't be entitled to an advance payment on those. That's not, this decree never anticipated that. And that was the thing that was actually fought tooth and nail to get done, and the court agreed. No, until you get paid on these two, you don't get a dime. Right now, she's gotten $400,000 on two assets that have not been paid.
Okay.
And I just don't think that's fair.
You can continue. My question's been
got confused here. I'll just wrap up on that, is that I don't think there's been any dispute that she received $1.4 million. I don't think there's any dispute that she's only entitled to $1 million out of the, I'm rounding, but $1,007,000 out of the preservation development receivable, and that the other receivables are out there, and if they're ever paid, they'll be split. But she shouldn't be entitled to keep $500,000 just because, I hate to say it, I think Stephen Schmidt kind of went a little overboard to start paying left and right when there was no attorney involved. And I like Steve.
So she should have to repay half of that amount to your client.
Oh, the entire amount. She's received her million. So she received a million four. It means she's
and
been
should have
overpaid by
received a million.
$423,000. And that should go back to my client. It's not divided. The receivable is a finite amount of money. Million. Here's your million. You're paid. Oh, I gave you a million and a half. I get a half million back. There's no. It's not cut in half.
In looking at the judgment that we're talking about, I mean, there's
judgment?
Inconsistency in the judgment about the value of these two receivables.
Mm-hmm.
Page 10 of the amended judgment, it talks about the parties agreeing that $2 million is owed by Preservation Development and $4 million by White Eagle, and it's different in the conclusions of law. It's just flipped. Does that make any difference in terms of the district court's analysis? I realize it's not an error or a seeming inconsistency that any of the parties brought to the court's
attention. I don't
think it
makes any difference related to what we're talking about. Preservation Development is pretty finite. It's pretty easy to figure out. It's pretty easy to figure out she got $500,000 more than she's entitled to. So he's entitled to get that money back. All I'm doing is enforcing the decree. And I don't think you can modify the decree as you kind of, not intimated, but asked me to comment on unclean hands. Unclean hands related to him not paying the spousal maintenance. We get that.
At the time the spousal, the motion was brought, and this was wife's motion that brought the parties back to court. It was a motion, wasn't it, to make your client pay unpaid
mm-hmm.
arrearages?
Mm-hmm.
What was the amount of the arrearages at that point?
I want to say, I don't know, 100,000, okay. Something like that. All I know is it's all been paid in full and the amount has been paid in escrow when I got involved. Obviously, it's very contentious in his mind for it to go on this long, too, and I can't account for the emotions that get involved in a case that drags on for 13 years. I couldn't imagine myself, but...
That is your 15 minutes, so we'll turn to respondent now for their argument, and you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
I'll address the spousal maintenance, which is very brief, in my reply.
Thank you. The clock is reset. Feel free to adjust the podium, and remember to introduce yourself and identify your client when you begin, please. You can begin when you're ready.
Excuse me. I apologize. May it please the court, my name is Jack Hicks, and I represent the respondent, Mary Rice, formerly known as Mary Block. This case has a long history, with the party's judgment decree being entered on February 7th, 2013, and its amended decree entered on July 31st, 2013. In its amended decree, the trial court found the marital estate was worth $10,627,552 and awarded the parties $5,313,776 apiece. However, the bulk of respondents' $5 million was tied to these three receivables that were worth more than $6 million. These debts were considered speculative, and it was unclear whether they would ever be repaid to the marital estate. Because of their nature, the trial court awarded each party half of the receivables to be paid if and when collected. By a separate order, respondent was awarded temporary spousal maintenance of $8,000 per month, until such time that this matter is further reviewed following final payment of the equalizer, realization of petitioner's share of the receivables, or both. The trial court went on to clarify that the award was not intended to indicate whether a permanent spousal maintenance award is appropriate, in part due to the extensive value of the properties owned by the parties, which is yet to be realized. This is a specific reference to the receivables. The amended decree was appealed and affirmed by this court, and since that time, the parties have been in near constant litigation for 11 years. Throughout the past 11 years, appellant has a history of self-help and defiance of court orders that has resulted in unreasonable costs and a waste of judicial resources.
Counsel, could you answer the same question I think that Judge Bjorkman asked opposing counsel, which is to the extent that the district court considered all of the accounts receivable together to decide that no overpayment occurred, is that error? Opposing counsel clearly believes that each account receivable needs to be treated separately.
Mm-hmm.
So address that for us.
Well, Your Honor, we don't believe it. We disagree with Mr. Johnson on that point. In the decree, the receivables are tied together. MH Mortgage is a passer entity that everyone kind of dismisses, if that makes sense. But White Eagle and Preservation Lot Developments is often together in the same amount, in the same receivable. Even on the balance sheet, at the end of it, says owed to the parties, Preservation and White Golf Course, $3 million. It's combined in the balance sheet. So we disagree with Mr. Johnson on that point.
Where does that leave us then? I'm trying to figure that out because it seems there's no dispute about the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would seem the numbers would suggest that, in fact, your client has been over, has gotten more than half of the money received on the debts owed to Preservation Development. Why am I wrong?
Well, Your Honor, throughout the district court and the appellate court said basically the parties are going to split these receivables if and when they're paid equally. Equal risk, equal reward.
And that's not what's mm-hmm. happened, is it?
I believe that is what has happened, Your Honor, because in the case of Preservation Development Lots, they have been, these lots have been sold off and the parties have been splitting them equally. That's what's been going on. That's exactly.
They all sold now?
Your Honor, there's a dispute. I believe there's two lots that have not been sold yet. And I'm not positive, though, Your Honor.
So the proceeds have been split. I'm with you there. But then, as I understand it, for whatever reason, your client received $466,000 of proceeds, and the husband didn't get anything.
Well, Your Honor, we disagree with Mr. Johnson that she's received $1.4 million for the lot sales. She has received $1.4 million from the sale of Preservation Development, but these were to satisfy judgments against appellant. And in Stephen Schmidt's letter brief, he says that there's been judgments paid for this and that and everything else. The district court in this appeal looked at that issue and found that appellant did not meet his burden on proving that there was an overpayment.
Yeah, that leads me to another question. That is, it seems like the district court's findings, while overall the order does what the parties asked the court to do, which was to go back and look at some of the historical orders, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And particularly the amended judgment that sets out how these receivables are to be divided. But it seems like we get down to just one finding of fact. The court finds that there has been no overpayment to petitioner. Is that enough for us? I mean, how can we review that and say, yep, there's a principled basis to affirm?
Well, Your Honor, I think that's a credibility determination by the court. The court looked at the affidavits from both respondent and appellant, and it decided in favor of respondent. And I think there's a good reason for that, and that's because as this court and Mr. Johnson has described, there has been a history of self-help by the appellant, and there is an issue of trust at the district court level. I think there is enough there in the order or in the record to find that there is enough in the order on that issue.
Can you direct us to other findings that support that determination by the court?
I believe, I don't have it off the top of my head, Your Honor. The issue that I think the court grappled with is how to deal with this constant litigation, constant bad acts on the part of the appellant. And I think the credibility issue that I was talking about is really at the forefront of this case. I think the court, I apologize. Respondent first brought the motion to find appellant in contempt of court because he owed more than $120,000 in spousal maintenance arrears. It was only until when she brought that motion did he bring his own motion to modify spousal maintenance and then also request this reimbursement. In my opinion, if there was an issue with the reimbursement, it probably should have gone to Steve Schmidt first before the court because he was the receiver in this matter.
Has his appointment ended?
His appointment has ended. I believe his appointment ended in 2023. Around the same time of this motion hearing. I would like to speak about the spousal maintenance modification just briefly. Appellant has been found in contempt of court previously in 2019. He knew he was required to bring a motion to modify before stopping payments, and he did not. He did not do so because he understood that there was a burden on him to prove a substantial change in circumstances that occurred. There was no substantial change in circumstances.
And why isn't your client's receipt of the $466,000 from which interest income could be generated, why isn't that a substantial change in circumstances?
Well, Your Honor, the court looked at that issue of whether or not these payments made would increase her ability to meet her own needs. The court decided or found that there was no, but that, I apologize, that appellant did not meet his burden in proving that.
So it was an evidentiary insufficiency in a sense.
Yes, Your Honor. And appellant did have the burden in proving that. Appellant did not engage in discovery to determine what assets Ms. Rice may have available to her to meet her needs. He could have done that. He did not do so. And frankly, we also were bringing a motion to compel him to provide us with discovery during this motion hearing. That was later dropped because appellant did pay his arrears, as well as the HOP hearing was canceled because me and Mr. Johns were able to work things out beforehand.
The order indicates those issues are reserved, but
those have been dismissed. The only issues are what's currently on appeal, Your Honor. I just want to note on the receivables. These were loans made from the parties during the marriage to these businesses. So basically what that means is that the parties loaned the businesses around $6 million during their marriage. Respondent isn't trying to modify the decree, as Mr. Johnson is arguing. Respondent is simply trying to enforce the decree. She's trying to recoup what the marriage brought and gave to these businesses and what she's rightfully owed. I think that the issue of the overpayment is, I think it's a couple of different things. I think it's an equitable argument that Ms. Rice is entitled to, you know, receive what she's owed. And again, these were receivables that were going to be paid if and when they were received equally. And that's exactly what happened here.
So I have a question, and I want to make sure I'm understanding the accounts receivable and the overpayment conceptually in a correct manner. The accounts receivable is the money that was owed, and they were to be, as that was repaid, it was to be divided equally between husband and wife. However, it seems to me that there's possibly been in collecting on the accounts receivable, the amount that was collected exceeds the amount that was originally established as the accounts receivable total amount. Is that correct? And that is what caused an overage?
That's Mr. Johnson's argument, Your Honor, that there was two, that the preservation developments was $1 million for Ms. Rice, $2 million to the estate, and then Ms. Rice was paid $1.4 million. So that's his argument, that the overpayment was for that amount of money. Our argument is that these receivables, because it is money, it's not a personal property or a house or something like that. It's money. It's, you know, liquid type of thing. Those should be combined, you know, together, and there is no overpayment. And we agree with the district court on that issue.
And that's even though then the total amount collected exceeds the original accounts receivable amount identified in the amended dissolution.
That's
agreement.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And then I just want to say one more item on the spousal maintenance issue. I think the court puts it perfectly when it said it drew the same conclusions as it did previously, stating that appellant simply wanted the court to presume respondent had sufficient income. It's not the standard for modification. And appellant did not meet his burden on that issue.
So he would have, according to your argument, husband would have had to get an expert or somebody to say, yes, this amount of funds that she's now been able to collect based on the receivables actually being received by Preservation Development, that there would have to be some sort of expert testimony about what kind of interest income that could generate?
Yes, Your Honor. It would need to be more than just him asking the court to presume something.
Okay.
Unless Your Honors have any other further questions, I'm all done.
Okay. I don't see any further questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, we will turn back to counsel for appellant for the final word. There are 5 minutes on.
Yeah, I'll try to go quickly.
Okay, you may begin when you're ready.
A couple comments that Mr. Hicks made, and I just want to clarify. He made it sound like when I sent this $290,000, we don't know what that was, could have been a bunch of stuff. If you look at my email, and I was intimately involved with meeting with Steven Schmidt several times to make sure what was paid, the 290 totally related to preservation development. If you look at the email, I sent probably 300 and some thousand dollars over because I paid a bunch of other stuff that was owed. Those were all line item by Mr. Schmidt. He didn't lump them together. He paid spousal maintenance he had in his trust. He paid other things. Those were all accounted for. The 290 plus what he specifically put in his letter that he paid on preservation totaled the $1.4 million. I don't think, quite frankly, there should be any dispute that she received that money. What I'm hearing now is that we should lump all these together and say $500,000 of that is going to go towards, when you get White Eagle, I already got $500,000 mine. Well, that's not what the court said. And even if you go look at one of the many orders that came out of this court, I wasn't involved. There's one from January 24th, 2019, and it's on page 3. It's paragraph 5. And this is what the court wrote. The parties agreed on the record that petitioner's one-half share of preservation receivable pursuant to conclusion 9C of the judgment decree shall be reduced by any future proceeds that petitioner receives as a result of any future sales of remaining preservation lots. Clearly, this order, even this judge recognized, you got $2 million, she gets $1 million, anything you get reduces that. When you get to zero, you stop. And what he's saying is, well, we're just splitting all up preservation lots. No, he was awarded preservation. That was his asset. He had to pay her $1 million of the receivable, and he did. And I think anything else is modifying, whether we, however you want to call it, it modifies the judgment decree, the property division, which is not modifiable. It simply was not lumped together. The only thing
related to that, Mr. Johnson, and maybe
pardon me?
I have a question related to that argument. This is from the order that, you know, is under appeal right now. Okay. I mean, in paragraph 19, Judge Gilligan says, even assuming the property equalizer has been paid, parens, which appears undisputed, and that Ms. Rice has received her share of preservation development, again in parens, which is in dispute, respondent has not demonstrated that petitioner has realized her share of MH or White Eagle. So, I mean, it seems to me this is a different statement than you made. The district court was saying it's disputed whether or not she had received her full share of preservation.
Well, the dispute, I don't think there is. If you look at the record, if he's saying that, then he's wrong, because nobody has disputed the amount that she's received from me and from Schmidt, which is $1.4 million. So if that's put in there, it's simply wrong.
Well, it's not tying it to a dollar figure, but it's just saying the concept of whether or not she's received her full share of preservation is disputed.
I don't know how to respond to that. Although the numbers are the numbers. Math is pretty simple to do, and the math is clearly out of whack. In regard to spousal maintenance, I have a minute. I'll give you my assessment of the spousal maintenance. I get all the bad faith. I get all the problems that he had, which have now been cleared up, and he's paid. I think this decree has a built-in change of circumstances that you look no further. I tried this case. And at the beginning of this case, when we tried it, it was clear that Ms. Rice was not going to work. And we were fine with that. She stayed home with the kids. I think they imputed like $30,000, $40,000 that she could possibly make. There's also no dispute that Mr. Block has money and he could pay spousal maintenance. I've never disputed that, nor did I dispute it today. What they did do is they didn't order spousal maintenance to begin with. And then they finally did it in an order after the amended judgment and decree.
When the equalizer payment turned out to be a lot less than.
Yeah, when it was the wrong number.
Right.
But I think clearly the court was anticipating, let's do the spousal maintenance. But as she receives some money, that's the only change you're ever going to see in this case. Money she receives that she could invest.
If that was the intention,
$2.2 million now.
If that was the intention, then why wasn't that laid out clearly in the language of the stipulation or in the order from the court?
Was that the intention?
Well, you're saying that it was a built-in change in circumstances, and my thought is that's the only change in circumstances
you'll ever have in this case, is that she gets a bunch of money that she can invest. We also had an affidavit from a financial expert indicating what you can make on that money. So people kept talking there was nothing in the record. There is something in the record.
Although the court rejected that.
Pardon me?
The court rejected the affidavit, as I understand the record.
Oh, I didn't understand that, but.
Said it was based on assumption, a 5% rate of return.
Maybe I read that wrong. I didn't catch it. But at any rate, I still think common sense tells you that if you receive $2.2 million, you're going to make something on it. And I'm not saying terminate the maintenance, but it should affect the amount that you pay. And I think that was all built into the judgment decree, and that's all we could ever argue going forward on that case. So that's all I got.
Okay, thank you. Thank you to both counsel for the briefing and the arguments here today. The case is submitted, and we will issue a decision within the statutory timeframe. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.